We'll deal with livestock today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. What's the best time to ship a steer? We'll ask Bill Miller on Scribble. You never know what's going to catch your attention, but the title of your book, Time to Ship Another Steer, caught mine. Bill, what is that all about?
Well, when you have when you raise 11 kids and you have a bill to pay on the farm, it's time to ship another steer.
I take it you were raised on a farm.
I'm one of 11 kids raised in Kenosha, Wisconsin, about 5 miles from Lake Michigan. And the story is about growing up with 10 siblings and 2 iconic parents.
My goodness, that's a lot of ground to cover. What prompted you to write the book?
Well, I knew that after my first book was a driving book, Come Drive With Me, I knew the first book took 5 years to collect 300 fun stories. So I knew I wanted to write something for my grandkids and my great nieces and nephews because I have about 35 nieces and nephews, and I come from a large family, and I just thought this would be a way to preserve some family history.
Mm-hmm. How did you get into writing in the first place? Did you study this in school or something?
No, I was an eighth grade history and government teacher for 34 years, and I like writing. Episode memories for people when I grew up, different people I had in my life that were important, some of my coaches, some of my teachers, my parents. And so when I retired from full-time teaching in 2010, I told everybody I was going to write a book. Well, nobody heard anything from me for several years because it took 5 years to collect 300 stories.
And that was for the first book or the second book?
The first book, Come Drive With Me, The Adventures, Perils, and Insights of a Driver's Ed Instructor.
Oh, my.
And what's good about that one is it's about 20% driving tips for any young drivers. Anybody would like to brush up on their driving, it is a must read.
Mm-hmm.
Well, even for an 85-year-old, we're facing having to take driver's tests every year,
and I start
worrying about the the rules
and
stuff.
And I've discovered that when you get to be 100, they won't give you a license.
Well, my dad was 90 in Wisconsin, and they gave him his license for 8 more years.
You're kidding.
No. And so when he was about 96 or 97, he gave it up. He decided he didn't need to be driving anymore.
Uh-huh. Yeah, my mother decided in her 90s that she sold her car and quit driving. I don't know what motivated her. She didn't have an accident or anything, but I guess she just decided that was it. She couldn't trust herself.
How did you end up becoming a driver's ed teacher?
Well, I taught eighth graders for 34 years, and after working that long with eighth graders, I just knew I had to have something safer and less stressful. So I became a driver's ed teacher.
You would never in a world get me to teach me in eighth grade. And eighth graders are a lot like I was. And it can't have been fun for the teachers that I had.
Is there any age, any level of education when it's easy to teach?
I think kindergarten, first grade is good. Junior in high school is probably good. Sophomore is bad because people are so sophomoric.
I always liked teaching eighth grade.
Did you really?
Because if you were creative, then you could reach most of them. Where I didn't like teaching eighth graders because they were still poking each other and tattling.
But, right.
No, in all my years of teaching in the regular classroom, eighth grade was my favorite.
Wow.
That's interesting. But, you know, I've always maintained that I've done a lot of things, including hard physical work, But the toughest job I ever had was teaching senior English in high school. And it was not so much the subject as just trying to involve every one of the students in the subject. You know, how do you connect with 20 or more people?
Well, that was my problem with high school is if a student had given up, you weren't going to have an impact on them. Where most eighth graders, if you were creative, then you would be able to reach most of them. And so I use a lot of those techniques and things when I teach my driver's ed class. And I have a very enjoyable, for most kids, very enjoyable driver's ed class, which is pretty unusual.
You were teaching driver's ed while you were teaching eighth grade?
For the last 5 years I taught eighth grade, I was doing it evenings, weekends, and summers. So then I knew when I retired from full-time teaching that this was what I would do. And I work about 1,000 hours a year. I work with 250 students a year.
You're still teaching
driver's ed.
Well, then you have a very practical book there. It's, what is it called?
Come Drive With Me.
Come Drive With Me, yeah. When did that come out?
I came out in October. Next month will be 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it took 5 years to put it together. My wife did all the cartoons. And it was fun, just a fun book. And it's most people, anybody that has a young driver, boy, I'd highly recommend it.
I noticed that it was published by a company that you started, right?
Miller Times Media. Because I have ideas for things I would like to do on my bucket list besides just write, we decided to name our company Miller Times Media.
Uh-huh.
And my editor, Christine Gilroy, her and my wife, Audrey, I wrote the stories, and then they were able to put them together into a book, and they're both awesome. My wife has just been proofing all my work since college, and Christine is a retired 30-year award-winning writing teacher, and she retired about 5-6 years ago from DeWitt. She also ran the school newspaper and the school yearbook for 23 years, and she's just finishing she's working on her 20th book, helping publish, edit and publish her 20th book.
How long did it take to do Time to Ship Another Steer?
Well, probably a couple years. I really got serious about it. Most of the work I did was in the past year because I teach so much driver's ed spring, summer, fall, and then I have my winters off. So I do most of my writing in the wintertime. So I would say a couple years, but the last year, last winter really is when I did most of the work.
Now, that's not very brave of you, not teaching driver's ed in the winter.
Well, most parents don't want their kids out in the snow, so That's why they don't offer it in the wintertime.
Before we move too much further, let's hear a page or two of your steer book.
Well, a couple funny stories about my folks. When my dad, I just lost both my folks last year. Mom, this is the painting of our home. And our home in a couple of years will be 170 years old.
Wow.
Both mom and dad were sharp to the end. They both died at home. And the house, my grandparents had it, my dad had it. So my grandparents and my parents raised 22 kids in this house, one bathroom. But Dad, when he was in his 80s, he went for a doctor's appointment, and the doctor scolded him for having had so many kids. Why didn't he use birth control? And my mother says to the doctor, "We did. That's why we only had 11.
But one bathroom, that takes organization,
right.
I would say.
And then when my youngest sister, in 1966, when my youngest sister Beth was born, Mom, it was time to go to the hospital, and Dad had hurt his back, and he was in the hospital. So Mom needed a ride to the hospital, so she calls my brother Mike. He's at the junior-senior prom, and he's in his tuxedo. He takes her to the hospital. I'm sure there's people thinking, boy, that's cutting it kind of short. Well, he gets to the hospital, and he looks pretty young in the waiting room, and he's a junior in high school. And somebody asked him, "Is this your first?" He said, "No, it's number 11.
Yeah, read us a little.
Okay, well, this is a story about when I was 5 years old. Dad had a heifer named Buttons that was bred too young, meaning had a calf too young. Somehow the bull had gotten to her before she was old enough, and she became pregnant. Because she was not big enough, she had a difficult delivery. The veterinary advised that Buttons not be bred a second time because she was going to be unable to have any more calves. After Button was milked for a year, instead of breeding her, she was fattened to be butchered. She was only 3 years old, and her meat would be prime. So when she was big enough, Dad decided it was time. They cut a tree from the woods and trimmed all the limbs, making it into a log to lay across the upper beams above the barn floor. From here, he planned to do the butchering. Because this was Buttons, our family pet, Dad had left strict instructions that none of the little kids should be permitted to come to the barn while he and his friend Jim were working. At 5 years old, I was somehow able to reach the barn. Surprised at what I saw, I asked Dad what he was doing. His answer worked for this small boy. "I'm taking off Button's overcoat," Dad replied.
If you keep that tone all the way through the book, that's going to be something that people will want to read. That's very good.
Well, the farmers, a lot of farmers have read it, and they really have really enjoyed it. In fact, we were in church about 3 weeks ago, and after church, an elderly lady came up, and she had raised 10 kids herself, and they were farmers, retired. And she came up after church with tears in her eyes and said how much the book had touched her. And what we're finding is anybody that grew up on a farm, had parents or grandparents grew up on a farm, or had a big family, what we're finding is this is a great memory jogger because everybody would like to save some of their family history, and there are people that have been able to use my book to do just that.
Well, you don't see. How large was your farm?
We didn't have a real big farm. Our farm was 96 acres, and we probably had about 75 tillable, but Dad had a full-time job. And then we did a lot of custom baling of hay and straw in the summertime, and then we also had an 8-acre garden. We lived on Highway 31. It was the main highway between Racine and Kenosha, and we sold 5 acres of sweet corn, 1,000 pints of raspberries every summer. We had 1,500 melon hills. We, in later years, Dad planted 1,000 tomato plants. But in all of those sources of income, Mom and Dad were able to put all 11 of us through 12 years of Catholic education. And Mom said the nuns were going to teach us and they were going to make us behave.
You couldn't do that anymore, could you? I mean,
Well, the way we did it, I'm sure not. Dad had a day job, so he was only able to help with the baling in the weekends and in the evenings. So in 1969, the oldest, and we used to bale around Racine and Kenosha counties, and our two oldest crew members on our hay baling crew that in 1961, that summer, were aged 12 and 13. Those were our two oldest crew members.
Holy moly.
Then my brother Mark and I, he was a year younger than I, we were 6 and 7 years old, and the baler was an old Roanoke baler. And back years ago in the 50s and 60s, the knotters didn't always work real well. So we'd ride on the baler all afternoon throughout the whole summer, and every 6th bale wouldn't tie, and we'd have to tie a square knot. Can you imagine today letting a 6 or 7 year old ride on a baler all the way through the fields throughout the summer?
You still have all your limbs.
Yes. Well, there's plenty of other stories where we could have lost them. In 1959, I was 6 years old. Mom would take us all. We were probably 4 or 5 years old. She'd take us to the corn patch, and we used to have 5 to 6 plantings of sweet corn. And Mom would give us a gunny sack, and at 6 years old, I remember, she'd put so many ears in a bag, and then we'd drag that bag of corn to the Rambler station wagon. And in 1959, I was 6 years old that summer, we had to have the corn to the grocery store in Racine by 7 a.m.
Right.
So we were probably out there by 5 or shortly after, and we used to get, 1959, we got a half a cent an ear for the corn. And then if we sold it on the roadside, we got retail, we got 25 cents for a baker's dozen.
My. You know, it is interesting when you think back to the relative value of money. When I started working at the age of 14, They had just recently established the minimum wage of 40 cents an hour. And it kind of embarrassed me that my older sister, who was working at the telephone company, made the same rate that I did as an office boy working part-time. But 40 cents an hour did it, you know. I'd make about $8 a week. That was big bucks. But that was back then.
Well, the attitude toward animals, that just the little bit you've done there that you exhibit, is so different from the factory farms of today, you know, or raising chickens. And the Chinese have a chicken factory now with something like, they get 1.5 billion eggs a day, and one guy operates the whole thing. Right? It's all automated. You never even see the chickens, hardly.
Well, when we were kids, the young ages that we were working at, we were milking the cow. We had one Guernsey cow, and now they don't produce as much as a Holstein, but in the summer, if you fed them good, you get a couple of gallons in the morning, a couple of gallons at night. Well, Dad would milk in the morning, we'd milk at night, then we'd milk morning and night during the summertime when we were off. And we were 9 and 10 years old milking the cow. Now, Dad could milk 2 gallons of milk in 2 to 3 minutes. Well, when you're 9 and 10 years old, you have no hand strength at all. It used to take us a half hour. And then the cow would start getting nervous. She'd start moving around. And then she'd swat you with her dirty tail. And then what she was really telling you is either you hurry up and finish, or I'm going to kick the pail over, or worse yet, I'm going to step in it. Yeah. And then Mom would really get upset when we came to the house with an empty pail because sometimes her milk customers would be waiting for the milk while we were in the barn.
Oh, boy, I tell you, that's getting the whole family into the act. But that must have bound you together very tightly as a family.
We were. Our family still, the last year and a half, Mom and Dad were at home. Because there's 11 of us, we made out a calendar every month, and we had somebody with Mom and Dad for the whole last year and a half. And it was just great. My family just was really close. My mother, in 1971, she had breast cancer. And she lived another 45 years. Mm-hmm. And my brother, that was in October of 71. And then my brother Mark, he was a year behind me. We were together in school, same year. And he broke his neck in December of 71, 2 months later, in a wrestling accident. They both survived, but it was life-changing for our whole family. And today our family is just still really, really close. But my mother, the way she lived her whole life was I think she looked at every day as a gift. And she felt like she got an extra 45 years. And her whole life, she was so much fun. In fact, the last fall that she was alive, 2 years ago, they celebrated their 70th anniversary in June of 2 years ago, June 1st. And then in July, she had some health issues. So she was on hospice. She's 94 years old. She's on hospice from July to January when she passed. She used to love to go to the casino. She made 2 casino trips up to Kashina, up near Green Bay. Both of them were about a 3-hour trip from home with a couple of my sisters, a couple of my nieces are nurses. They went up there, and both trips overnight was 10 to 12 hours. She played blackjack and Texas Hold'em.
Is that all in your book?
All in the book, yes.
Now, I'm sure there are listeners out there that already would like a copy. Where can we get one?
The book, you can get them at Amazon. Also in Maquoketa, they're at that's where I taught for 34 right. years. They're at Osterhaus and Finders Keepers. In Clinton, they're at Peaceful River Creations. In DeWitt, they're at Meant to Be. And I have an appointment later in the week with the book rack in Davenport.
Would be a good place.
My website, and there's a lot of information about the books and my background and things, www.driversedbill.com.
Driversedbill.com.
Should be easy enough to remember.
Yeah, that's true. That I must say, Bill, you've done, I think, just from our brief encounter here, you've done a wonderful job in writing stuff that I think people would really want to read and enjoy reading. Too bad you didn't start earlier.
Well, you know, some people, you know, I look at people that retire, don't know what they're going to do, and I sit there and think, I'll never finish everything that I would like to do. I have a lot of ideas and things I want to do yet. But the book, really, Time to Ship Another Steer. I can thank Christine Gilroy, my editor. A couple of years ago, we were talking about what I wanted to write, and I wasn't sure there'd be much of a market for it. And she says, people eat that stuff up because it's real and it's family history. And when I told her about when it's time to pay a bill, you ship another steer, she loved that title. So at the last – well, I wasn't going to call it that. At the last minute, that's what I decided to go with. And it's fun just to look on people's faces when they hear the title.
Now it's time to sell another book.
Yeah, that's right. Where do you go from here, Bill?
Well, I spent over 25 years developing games and activities as a teacher. Some of those I use in my classroom, my driver's ed class. And what I would like to do, that project, I'd like to publish a book on just creative ideas that teachers could use in the classroom. That's one idea. And then I would like to do a book on my mom and dad. Dad, we have hours and hours and hours of him. Before he got married, when he was number 8 of 9 kids, and he had he was the second youngest in the family, and because of his depression, most of them were still at home. So he grew up feeling like he had 5 fathers telling him what to do. So he graduated at 17, hopped on a train, and went to California with a friend. And he celebrated his 18th birthday on a boxcar in California. Mm-hmm. And never told his folks that he was leaving. And then my mother was a member. She was from a family of 14. Her dad had 4 kids. His first wife passed, so he remarried. My mother was the oldest of the next 10, and she was she's been the matriarch of the whole family since the 1960s. And so then my dad got drafted. They'd only dated a few times, so their romance was through the mail. And my dad was 4.5 years in the Army in World War II. He spent 3.5 years in the Aleutian Islands. He was a baker, and Aleutian Islands is 900 – that's up by Russia. It's up in the Pacific, 900 miles from Anchorage, Alaska. And during that 3.5 years, he never had to leave home. And he never saw a woman for 3.5 years. So when he got home in 45, mom made him wait until the following spring before they could get married. Well, in the meantime, my mom and my dad's mother became really, really close. My mom would run errands and help her with things. And one time my grandma writes dad a letter and she says, you better not – he writes dad a letter and says, you better not let this one get away.
Bill,
well, you're not going to run out of books to write.
No, you have stories to tell, and they're the kinds that people want to read. Keep writing. Keep writing. Bill Miller, the author of Ship Another Steer, and whether you've lived on a farm or not, you're really going to like this one. Thanks a lot for spending time with us, Bill.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been fun.
I must say that Bill has kind of followed your instructions that you want everybody to write memoirs.
Right. It's amazing.
Yeah.
The stories he has.
Yeah, that's true. And he told us afterwards that he had a chance to go up and spend several days each year with his father, talk to him, and just soak up all family information. It is a fact that in this day and age, we know our memory only goes back one generation. For some people, two, but that going back to the grandparents, that's kind of fuzzy because we no longer live in 3-generation homes. We no longer have that close relationship across the generations. And so all that's lost, but not for Bill. So you have anything in the
Well, sure, I do. Yes. Okay. I want to go back to a writer that I just mentioned briefly a couple of times ago, Frank Waters, the Taos, New Mexico writer, who really deserves to be kept alive, his writing. The book I mentioned a couple of weeks ago was The Woman at Otawi Crossing, and I hope some of you have picked that up to read. It's about an Indian woman at the edge of Los Alamos in a little restaurant called Otawi Crossing, who, right in the middle of the Adam Project, hush-hush secret, began to have dreams of a mushroom cloud. And so accurate were her dreams that the FBI came out and investigated. They think somebody was leaking information someplace, which they couldn't afford. But it turns out nobody was talking. It's just somehow she picked up this sense of the – and it's a great story. It's a true story.
Mm-hmm.
But Frank Waters is also a man who deserves to be kept alive. He wrote a whole series of books that I suppose we would call minor classics. His best-known book is called The Man Who Killed the Deer, and it deals with the peyote cult among some southwestern Indians. Peyote is a hallucinogen. It contains the drug mescaline, from which the synthesized version is LSD, which became really popular in the 60s. And this is about a young Indian man who participates in this peyote cult and has visions of a deer. The other thing that Frank Waters wrote that is really worth reading is a study of a nearby Hopi reservation called Pumpkin Seed Point. And unlike many white writers, really had the trust of the Hopis. I mean, they welcomed him in their community. And he wrote a very honest account of what life was like on this Hopi reservation way up high on a mesa. And it is entirely romantic or positive. They were polluting the atmosphere with their waste and junk as much as anybody was. But it is a great study of a Hopi community. And it's a study that most people know little about. Anyway, I would recommend that you pick up anything by Frank Waters and read it.
Mm-hmm. So he wrote a whole string of books, huh?
Oh, he wrote a whole bunch of books, all dealing with the Southwest, all very good books, but probably not, you know, Hemingway and Steinbeck and Faulkner. But there's so many writers who should not be forgotten.
That's almost impossible, though.
It's almost impossible.
Yeah, there's
right.
So many writers and so many good books. You run across them all the time. You pick up a book and you think, boy, this is really nice.
You know, it's like that story of the girl who was walking with her dad on the beach and there were thousands of starfish that were stranded, and she picked up one and threw it back, and her dad said, "You're not going to make any difference to these." And she said, "It'll make a difference to that one."
Yeah.
I can't mention all the writers who deserve, but Frank Waters is somebody you need to go back and take a look at.
You know, that first book you mentioned of his made me think of Om Seti, an amazing book about this,
right.
This English woman who apparently in her own mind lived in the past with a pharaoh and had an amazing knowledge of...
But what she turned out to be was things they didn't even know and then subsequently discovered were actually true.
Oh, boy. There's a mysterious world out there.
It
and
is
you can
very
find
mysterious.
A lot
world.
Of it in books. Well, that'll do it for now. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. We thank you for being here with our visit with Bill Miller. And we'll be back next week with another author. And we hope you'll join us for the next edition of Scribble.